Getting wild around at night, and then that's when I.
The real meeting. Okay, I'm going to open the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources and open a public hearing on House Bill 2327. This was a bill that we didn't get to the other day and had the nice folks ask whether they could come back or not. They were gracious enough to say they would come back rather than rush them through. So please join us, Maida and Eric. And Mary Ann, you can come now if you want, if there's an extra seat, or you can wait. It doesn't matter. There's three of you total, but... Okay. Tell us about House Bill 2327.
Good morning, Chair Klim, Vice Chair McLean. For the record, Maida Lofsgaarden, Executive Director with the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. With me also this morning, I have Eric Hartstein, who is our Senior Policy Coordinator. He provided copies for you all of written testimony, I think did a really nice job of succinctly describing what we're trying to do in the seven parts of this bill. I'm not going to reread that written testimony. What I'd like to do this morning is provide you with some background to what got us to this cleanup bill. So generally, that's what House Bill 2327 is. For by way of background, OEB is a fairly small agency in terms of staff, but we do represent 16% of the natural resource budget for the state, and that is through grant investments that we do, largely for restoration projects on both private and public lands, rivers, sage grouse, you name it, across the state. We're invested in all counties in the state. And so the cleanup that we're talking about today is really to help our grant programs operate more efficiently. I asked our staff to go through our statutes and really take a look at those things that weren't relevant anymore. We do have a couple of policy items in here. I want to make sure to touch on those. I'm going to walk through each of the sections. Would welcome any questions that you have as I go through or questions at the end. So the first section of the bill talks about liability insurance for our grantees. And by way of background, the statutes for the state provide immunity for landowners who are entering into restoration projects under the Forest Practices Act or if they're working with OEB or ODF&W on a project. However, that immunity does not extend to those who are doing the project on a landowner's land. So typically a watershed council, a soil and water conservation district, or land trust are not afforded the same immunity that landowners are. Because of that, for many years, the Department of Administrative Services provided liability coverage for watershed councils. It was way back from when the agency was formed and was, to be honest, a bit of an oddity from the beginning because it was a state agency who was providing liability coverage for nonprofits. And so it was a little funky. They always had a problem trying to figure out how watershed councils fit in. That combined with the fact that watershed councils are not the only people who are doing projects on the ground, and that the coverage that was provided was pretty modest, and projects are getting a lot more complex. So the liability coverage really wasn't enough for what we saw the types of projects that were being done. So in this section and then later on in section four, what we're proposing to do is here require that all of our grantees obtain liability coverage so that we make sure that these are big projects and they're complex with machinery and working in stream. We want to make sure that they're covered. We also in our programs allow for that to be a part of the grant application. So we can fund them for that. So it's not any cost to those local organizations. So here we're recommending that DAS, that liability coverage be removed for DAS, and later on in Section 4, we require that councils, districts, and other grantees receive liability coverage. So that's Section 1. Section 2 is really just a cleanup. Back in the late 1990s, there was an agreement amongst the state and a number of agriculture and conservation organizations called the Healthy Streams Partnership. A good agreement with some really great language around what we want to do to keep our streams healthy in the state. That agreement, however, has not been used for about 18 years. So while the agreement has some great wording and in recent conversations that we've had, we actually think there's a lot that can be revitalized in the agreement. We felt it was odd for an agreement to be referenced in statute. That isn't typical. Usually it's the other way around. A statute will be referenced in an agreement. We are not asking to sunset the agreement. We're just asking to remove it from statute. We will be having conversations with folks who are very interested in revitalizing the Healthy Streams Partnership about how we can do that, but we don't think that the reference to statute is appropriate and are asking that it be removed. Section 3 is a bit larger policy item. Representative Witt could probably give you the background about our OEB board because he used to serve on it many years ago. We have 17 members on our board. It's very large. Six of them are at-large appointees by the governor. Five represent other agency boards and commissions. And I think that might have been how Representative Witt was on our board. So we get that cross-section from other state agencies so that we know what they're doing and they know what we are doing. And then six represent OSU Extension and federal agencies. Those are non-voting members, but they are critical to the work that we do because the work that we do is also funded by USDA, by National Marine Fisheries Service, by EPA and others. So we want to have those folks at the table so that we can really partner in the way that is most effective. The organization, the agency that has not been at the table is the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. There are many reasons that date back to the late 1990s and a bird called the spotted owl that are probably why we didn't have Fish and Wildlife Service on our board. But in conversations with agriculture and conservation groups, we believe that the work Fish and Wildlife Service is doing so closely matches our work that we'd like to ask that they be an ex officio non-voting member of our board. Section 4, again, in addition to the liability piece that I mentioned before, also would require that each watershed council report the activities of the council to the county governing body. This would align with our current administrative rules, so making sure that councils who are authorized by their counties are reporting back to those counties. Section 5 is not new language. You'll see under Section 7 we're proposing to repeal some statute, but there's some language that we think is really important to keep. And so that language, again, that OWIB will provide a watershed enhancement program to benefit all users of the waters in Oregon. We want that language to stay. We think that's an important part of what we do. But we're pulling it out of a part of a statute that we're repealing later. Section 6 is repealing some elements related to the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. There's been a requirement on the books since our inception that we report on watersheds and habitat conditions in each drainage basin in the state. We are simply not equipped staffing-wise to be able to do that, nor are the other agencies. We have a fairly small staff. We do a lot of reporting. We do it statewide. We have some excellent reporting systems in combination with our other state agencies, but it is just not possible for us to report at this scale and level. In addition, a minor change here, we report to you every 2 years on the Oregon plan, so biennial report. We have always reported to you in odd-numbered years because the legislature didn't used to meet in even-numbered years. The challenge with that is we are reporting, and we still have 6 months left to go in the biennium. So what you get is not a complete report from us. We're proposing to move to even-numbered years so that you get a more accurate reporting of what's gone on in the biennium. Finally, we are proposing to repeal a statute, ORS 541-920. The majority of the language in that statute has us coordinating with the State Service Center for GIS. That agency no longer exists, so we are not able to coordinate with them. It also repeals 541-965, which requires other natural agencies to provide us with a written report of anything related to enhancement or restoration of riparian or uplands. That was back in the day when we didn't have good internet, and so all of those reports are available online. We were keeping boxes and boxes of written reports in our office from other agencies because we were required to when the majority of folks get that information online. And so we're proposing that we no longer be the written repository for that information. So with that quick summary, I would welcome any questions that you have specific to the bill. And I know Marianne is here to speak to a couple of parts of it as well.
Why don't we have Marianne go, then we'll take all the questions at once.
Chair Klim, members of the committee, my name is Marianne Nash, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Farm Bureau today, just with a couple of quick comments to the bill. First off, we appreciate the clarification on liability insurance. As I'm sure several of you will recall, we have been working for a number of years to clarify and alter some loopholes in that liability exemption that have been problematic for some of our members. And one of the biggest challenges in moving that legislation forward has been an incredible amount of confusion about what liability actually exists. And I think I've discovered that maybe some organizations are unaware that they could be liable for some of these actions under current law. And so, of course, we think adequate insurance and a clarification on liability is really important. And we think this bill is a positive step in that direction of just making sure that people understand the base requirements of current law. And secondly, the portion that's repealing the Healthy Streams Partnership, that's taking that out of statute, we want to make clear with that, as Maida mentioned, that is not repealing the agreement and that there still will be conversations under that agreement because there was a lot of work by a lot of organizations that went into that. And I think a lot of elements that will really be positive as we're looking to water quality improvements in the years to come. So we're eager to be part of those conversations about how maybe to utilize parts of the agreement moving forward and want to make clear that removing the reference to it does not repeal or alter the agreement. So with that, I will conclude. Thank you.
Any questions for this panel? Vice Chair McLean.
Well, the immunity one is the one that always, you say immunity. And I agree with you that it's really important for us to have good coverage. And I think that piece makes me feel very comfortable the way you've handled it. And I also agree with you that it gives more clarity to folks that are doing the work and folks that are on the land. And so I really appreciate that one. Your second comment, though, that I want to talk about, because for me, the only thing that was controversial at all is the fact that when you have an agreement that's in statute, usually it means these are basics, minimums, bottom lines. They're difficult to get to, and we've gotten a lot of people on board. And I had a couple of friends who have written grants for watersheds forever, and she's very good at it. And I just want to make sure that we're not undoing, like you were trying to indicate, that we're not undoing all of those relationships, because I hate to see us do work in silos. So if you could respond to that one.
Yes. Chair Klim, Representative McLean, thank you very much for the question on the Healthy Streams Partnership Agreement. We had the same question. So we started, it was an interesting path that we went down. When we originally were proposing to remove this, it was, again, because although established in 97, it had not been used, referenced, no work had been done in that area for over 15 years. And so the staff said, we're wondering why this is even here anymore, and so the staff proposed that we remove it. Subsequent in conversations that we've had with Farm Bureau and OFIC and others, the question came up, let's talk about what this agreement is. And we pulled up the language. The language itself, again, has some excellent areas that I think as we're working in what is now called the Clean Water Partnership, when it relates to voluntary measures that we can move forward in terms of water quality with a regulatory baseline and then stepping up our voluntary efforts, there's a lot of good language in there. If you look at the statute, all it says is that as we're working on the Oregon plan, we will also work on the guidance statement and framework provided by the Healthy Streams Partnership. So it's just a reference that says, hey, we want you to work on this agreement as well. All of what we're allowed to do in statute lets us do that already. And so for us, what it really did become is it's very odd to have this kind of off reference to an agreement in statute and not the converse reference. As Marianne said, we're actually a little bit excited that this came up in conversation because the staff was proposing to remove it because we think there's a lot there in the agreement. We also think there's some stuff that might not be as relevant anymore, and so what we'd like to do is go back into that and really have a conversation with the Farm Bureau, the Cattlemen's Association, the conservation organizations, and others, and find out what's really relevant today. An agreement that's 18 years old and has not been touched in that time, I think, needs some work, but there was enough excitement around it that we're actually looking forward to revitalizing those concepts and figuring out how we bring them forward. So we do not believe this has any impact, and actually honestly helped, I think, bring that conversation to light.
May I just
Follow-up?
The follow-up is, that makes me feel better about it, because again, it's you're not throwing it out, you're just updating, and you're re-engaging.
Yeah.
And the re-engaging, I think, is the important part.
Representative Escobar.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. On Section 6, it's basically doing away with the reporting. I would like to know if you know, why did we start it in the first place, and there can't be any more streams than there was in those days? Why all of a sudden can't we do it?
Chair Clem, Representative Escoval, thank you for the question. We were never able to do it. It was something that was written into statute, and we have never had the staffing to be able to do that. So it's not that
complied.
It was something we used to do. We just never were able to. And we found that in the reporting that we do now through the Oregon Watershed Restoration Inventory and other things, we're getting to some, I think, what are critically important reporting criteria, but this reporting at that drainage basin level is just more than we as a small agency are able to do. So we weren't able to do it in the past either.
Follow-up.
Representative Escobar, yes, follow-up.
Thank you. How long has this been in place?
Chair Clem, Representative Escoval, I can't speak specifically. Our original statutes were passed in the late 90s, and I think this is part of those, although we had a complete rewrite of many of our statutes in 2011 when the funding was passed to make our agency's granting programs permanent. So I don't know for sure it was either written in the late 90s or in 2011. We can check and get back to you.
No, that's fine. I'm just curious.
Yeah, thank you.
That's a good question.
Additional questions? Representative Smith.
Thank you. To go to Representative Escobar's question, would it be possible to set up a watershed study that you can present us in a way that you're doing certain sections of the state in a given year? I assume that's probably where you're going anyway, but it's just not going to be in the legislation.
Yes. Chair Clem, Representative Smith, thank you for the question. The challenge is that it's a report on watershed and key habitat conditions in the drainage basin. So that means every drainage basin in the state, and that's just not what we're equipped to do, but you're absolutely correct. We have both statewide reporting, and we are also through a work with the Department of Agriculture, Environmental Quality, the USDA, and now the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We have what's called the Conservation Effectiveness Partnership, where we are going into specific watersheds. Willow on the east side of the state, 15 Mile in central Oregon, Wilson on the west side, and doing some really in-depth analysis. This is particular to water quality, but we would be more than happy to share with you what that looks like so that you can see the in-depth work that we are doing in those places across the state.
Follow up. So I assume that you, of course, partner with your watershed councils throughout the county. I know in Curry, for example, they have a very robust watershed councils. I think there's 13 of them, although. And so I can understand that it would be probably you probably don't have the staff to adhere to the law here to manage Coos and Curry County, let alone the rest of the state. So you reach out to your watershed councils to at least give you some data to adhere to this legislation, do you not?
Chair Clem, Representative Smith, yes, we do. The watershed councils that we fund are both required to provide us a biennial plan of work for the work that they're doing, and then each of them has a watershed plan that they follow. And so we do gain a lot of information from them on their priorities and their areas to work. The watershed and habitat conditions, again, is just a little bit higher bar. But I think as we're moving forward with them and the watershed plans that they are putting together, the more that we can do to provide them resources to get to this level, I think will be incredibly helpful.
Yes. Thank you.
Representative Power?
I just wanted to double check that watershed councils have been made aware of this change, and do you have specific liability protections in mind that you're going to find sufficient?
Yes, Chair Klim, Representative Power, we do. So when we started moving forward on this and realized that the DAS insurance just wasn't really enough to provide the liability protections needed, we convened a work group of councils, soil and water conservation districts, and land trusts to help us build what that should be. Luckily, we have some very strong organizations in the state who have already gone down this path, and we're really good about describing what that insurance should be. In addition, DAS has what they call a risk management tool that you can actually enter any project into. So, for example, if you're doing a big culvert project, which we do, you can find out if your insurance actually covers that or if you need to have a rider specifically for that project. We are going to be asking and have put out initial information, everybody, when they submit a project, to go through and determine whether their current insurance is coverage enough or if they need that specific rider for a project. And in those cases, again, we can cover the costs in our grant for them to do that. So it shouldn't be something where they're worried about a higher cost, because we would be able to cover that if the grant was funded.
Any further questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was a different bill that Jenny wanted. Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2327. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2043, and ask Senator Hansel to join us. Welcome, Senator.
Well, thank you. For the record, my name is Bill Hansel, State Senator for District 29. My district includes six full counties and half of another one. I started Hells County on the east and end at the Dallas Dam. Our district, I think if you take it in its entirety, would probably be the leading ag-producing area of the state because of our size and the diversity that we have.
Just for the record, Marion County is doing pretty good.
My well, but it's
just
not.
FYI, I just throw it out there.
I understand that, but it has at least two senatorial districts.
Oh.
We're talking about District 29 in its entirety.
It's got like five. You're right. Now we're really diluted.
Yeah, no, that's okay. But we're number two as a county, Umatilla County, to Marion County.
Who's great.
Talking district. Anyway, noxious weed, obviously. And thank you for the opportunity to testify on this very important issue. Noxious weeds have been a part of my public career for about 27 years. While I served as Umatilla County Commissioner, I also served as chair of the State Noxious Weed Board. Some of you might remember when I addressed this interim committee a few months ago. But I want to take a moment and explain some of the impacts noxious weeds have on our state. Noxious weeds affect the environment, fish habitat, and commercial agriculture. They do more harm than good. We have had these invasive plant species in Oregon, and early detection and eradication are absolutely critical. I applaud the efforts of the Department of Agriculture, what they've done and are doing for our state. I believe you'll probably hear from Tim Butler, the ODA noxious weed director, sometime this morning. But I wanted to give you a personal story about noxious weeds in Oregon, and specifically in my district. We are working very diligently to try to keep invasive weeds at bay. I had the privilege in August to take a tour on the Columbia River and look at one of these invasive species called flowering rush. There are several sites. The flowering rush is an invasive aquatic weed that travels through the water as a root bulb, and upon falling to the river's floor, takes root and then multiplies. This plant is starting to appear in our state, specifically in my district. The invasive species came to Oregon probably from Flathead Lake in Montana, where it somebody released it. And if you travel to Flathead Lake, you can see how this weed has taken over estuaries and streams. Through the floating root process, it's traveled down the Columbia River to Oregon. We are working very closely with our sister departments in Washington to address this problem. We are also working with the Corps of Engineers. It's amazing what needs to be done to fight just this single weed and this invasive plant. Right now, flowering rush is pretty much just in my district on the Columbia River. It is these types of species that cause a great deal of problem for us. However, it is not just aquatic invasive plants that are our problems. Mr. Butler and the folks from ODA can give you more examples of plants in our state. The state has a vibrant and robust program, and it should continue. It really is easy for us to say we need to make cuts. But by cutting a program like this, we will truly actually create an even bigger issue. I can use the example of wildfire. If you can get ahead of it and stop it early, you save all sorts of financial costs down the road. You save the natural plant and animal habitats. You can, and you also can save tremendous expenses for the both the private and public sector. When invasive species get into our agriculture field, it's expensive, and the effects on our ability, and it affects our ability to grow food. I am here to give all of you, my colleagues, my heartfelt desire and support to continue this program. We need all the help we can get. I'm happy to see the funding bill for this noxious weed program. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Representative Escobar.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, what is the state of Washington doing?
Well, that's the same thing that we're doing now is trying to eradicate it. There are a variety of ways. It's listed. We're working together cooperatively. Some of the sites are right near the border, so we're working on surveys. The fact that we share the Columbia River with Washington, we are working cooperatively to identify on both sides of the river. It's under the umbrella of the Corps of Engineers who have jurisdiction on the river itself. So as we find new sites, we let them know, we bring resources together, we share information. But basically, it's the same type of approach. What we saw in Oregon, different sites, they do some pull. They actually have divers that do pulls, or they take big screens and anchor them onto the ground over the infestation and kill the plant because it denies the sunlight. It's expensive. It's involved and labor intensive, but if we can get it and get it out, it'll save a whole lot of heartache issues down the road. But to leave it there, it'll just take off.
Invasive species are going to be the thing that we have to really look for in the future because, you know, as people start moving around mobility, example now, we're starting to catch boats coming in with quagga mussels and,
that's exactly
you
right.
know, and so on and so forth. But more importantly, we found out Representative Witt and I were down in Mississippi at the National Sportsman's Caucus and found out that we have traces of feral hogs through up to the Columbia River now.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, we're getting an invasion here. We don't even know it. So thank you for your work on it.
Representative McKeown.
Chair Clem, Senator Hansel, to reflect on Representative Esquivel's comments, we all know how important this is. Every one of our districts, we have horror stories. For Representative Brock Smith, who has been just stalwart in trying to eradicate sudden oak death down in Curry County, which is a huge threat. The gorse in Coos and Curry County is a big problem. We have Japanese knotweed coming down our streams in western Oregon, which is a huge problem for all kinds of issues. I just can't thank you enough for your work on this. And this is critical. It's just not quagga and zebra mussels. It's all of it. And I really appreciate you bringing attention to this. And hopefully we can, you know, sustain enough money in this fund to actually have an impact in this next session. And I know it's going to be really difficult, but we appreciate you leading the charge here.
Other questions for Senator Hansel? Okay, let's you get back to, we won't call it the upper or lower chamber, just the other chamber.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
These three seem to be together.
Okay. Whose bill is it?
It's really scary. It's
okay. Okay, so then I'm going to go down the sign-up sheet, but I think maybe one person is not next to the other three, but would like to come up with them. So tell me if that's true. So I've got the chair. No, Claire. Sorry, Claire Kluick. Clock. And Vern Holm. And then is Don with you in part of your group?
I can be.
Well, since you came from a long way, why don't you come on up?
Good morning, Chair Clem and members of the committee. My name's Claire Clock. I'm a semi-retired conservation specialist with Clackamas County Soil and Water Conservation District, and I'm a fully retired production farmer from Corbett, Oregon. Thank goodness with this cold weather that we've had, I didn't spend a bit of time out there when the chill factor was 20 below zero this winter. Anyway, what I'm here today is to support the ODA funding of the weed control program. However, I believe that it's in the best interest not to eliminate the biocontrol program. And the reason I say that is that individual entities such as the conservation districts, watershed councils, weed control management areas, individual counties do not have the combined source to actually carry those kind of programs. And so the state has had a biocontrol program, and I would hope that you would include that in the funding. And I understand funding is a tough one, but that's something that we can do as a total rather than just individual organizations. Thank you.
And Vern? Or whoever. You go whatever order you like, no problem.
Okay, thank you, Chairman Clem. I've been in weed control for a long, long time, 26 years with the county.
This is
10 years before that with a private company.
Hey, Don, we need to have you say your name for the record.
Oh. My name is Don Farrar. I'm with the Gillum County Weed Department.
All right.
Okay. What I was going to talk about a little bit here was similar to what he's talking about. I think it was 2000 or 2001 that we put together a strategic plan for weed control in the state of Oregon. Tim can probably answer closer than I can. And in that plan, we had the way it was going to be laid out was that basically the counties were going to be foot soldiers. Anything like flowering rush coming in would be a priority for ODA to work on. And the biocontrol was going to be it was just going to fill in the gaps where the funding wasn't. Well, it seems to me like we're losing that. So that could be critical to us. I don't know how to tell you to spend the money, but I would look at making sure that we kept the ODA in place. We are the foot soldiers, and I'm saying that as a county person, so understand it's going to impact me if we... So I was hoping we could find more funding to keep them stable currently. That's truly what we need, and I'm saying that, as a county that would sacrifice something for it. Fortunately, my county has done pretty well with themselves because it's largely agriculture, and my landowners tax themselves. We have a special assessment of 7 cents an acre for weed control. And that helps quite a bit. So I do have some stable funding. I'm here, obviously, to support the bill. Any questions?
Well, let's finish the panel, then we'll do questions for any of you at one time.
My name is Vern Holm. I'm the coordinator for the Western Invasives Network, which is a consortium of 8 cooperative weed management areas in Northwest Oregon and Southwest Washington. I'm happy to say that we will have another CWMA developing to protect the Oregon Dunes National Recreational Area, so we'll be going down the coast also. Letters of testimony that you've received have covered a lot of nuts and bolts with cost-benefit analysis, cost saved, doing weed control, and so forth. But as coordinator for the CWMAs, I have to talk about what the Oregon Department of Agriculture's weed control folks mean to us on the ground. I work with 125 different agencies, local, regional, state, and federal. Every one of them depends on the Oregon Department of Agriculture's field people to help with technical information, guidance, mentoring, and general attitude adjustment. Because when going up against invasive species, it's a never-ending job. In Washington State, each county gets money for weed control, and they have regulatory abilities in each county. Here in Oregon, we have 5 staff that covers the entire state, and I have not ever seen anyone from ODA staff turn down a challenge. If you want boots on the ground as a representative of a state agency, meeting with people, working with people for the good of agriculture and the natural environment, the ODA weed management staff is the place to go. I also want to put in the plug once again for our biocontrol program. I've been on the Oregon Natural or Oregon Invasive Species Council. I work with the Washington Invasive Species Council and the National Invasive Species Council. And I can tell you that the ODA biocontrol program is recognized worldwide. And the efforts have paid off so well. And I know you have a difficult session ahead of you, but I certainly do encourage funding for this very, very important position. Thank you.
Well, the good news is this committee doesn't have to make the final decision, but 2 of the nice gentlemen over here do, so we don't have quite the responsibility that they have for in the end. Well, actually, all 3 of you are on the subcommittee. This is the whole Ways and Means wing.
That's what I was going to say. So. Ways and Means, and we'll see you over there.
That's right. So we could pander to you from this side and talk about the billions of dollars we should invest, and then they can glare that that's totally inappropriate. So we won't do that. Any questions for this panel? Representative McEwen?
Just a comment, yeah. Chair Clem. And it's the millions of dollars we'll save if we make this investment that I would like to highlight, because it will cost us in spades if we back off on these programs. National Dunes Recreation Area, of course, near and dear to my heart. My husband spends every summer with a crew of high school kids pulling scotch broom. It's an ongoing problem. European beach grass, we all know what these issues are, and we just I just want to thank you all for your work, because it's really critical to the health of the entire state. We all have problems, and we really appreciate what you do. It's really important.
Thank you. Vice Chair McLean.
And I promise I'm not pandering to you. I'm pandering to the Ways and Means side of our committee.
We're all looking over here.
Yeah, we're looking over here. You know, to me, you haven't even been strident enough about how important this is, not just economically, but environmentally, that it's extremely important for us to have. I pulled scotch broom out of the same field 5 times, you know, in my teenage years. And we did it every Saturday as a family, you know. And it's one of those things where you have to get in front of it. You have to at least try to keep even, right? So I think it's money well spent, and I hope we can, again, find the funds to continue with a very strong program in Oregon.
Further questions? This group, we've got a few more, four or five more witnesses. Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Okay, Jerome Rosa, Peter Kanegi, and Michelle Delapine.
Stop commenting. It's just really important. We had to do what Washington does.
Peter. Okay, Jerome, I got you first on the list.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jerome Rosen. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. Oregon Cattlemen's Association supports House Bill 2043 and funding for Oregon's weed control programs. The Oregon Department of Ag's biological control program for noxious weeds is critical to Oregon's agriculturals, and 2043 can ensure that ODA has sufficient funds to continue this valuable program. The funding for weed control also allows local ranchers through weed control districts to provide early detection and prevention of threatening plants. Noxious weeds and invasive species wreak havoc on Oregon's rangelands and pastures. Controlling these threats to our ranches provides a valuable return on investment to Oregon's economy. The return on investment of these funds and benefit to rural economies is just another opportunity for legislators to support rural Oregon. The Oregon Cattlemen's Association is the voice of the cattle industry in Oregon. We represent ranchers in Oregon and aim to grow Oregon's beef.
Apparently it's given us some feedback, so maybe slide the mic a little bit. There you go.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Do you want me to start all over?
We're okay.
We represent the ranchers in Oregon and aim to grow Oregon's beef industry and promote environmentally and socially sound economic practices in producing beef products sold worldwide. The Oregon Cattlemen's Association has nearly 2,000 members with its cattle ranches in Oregon, using 57% of the state's agricultural land and comprising 14% of the Oregon's total ag sector. Please support our beef industry and vote yes on House Bill 43. And I'd like to commend Chair Clem on his comments about Marion County. We are a wonderful county. And
I mean, we're just number one. We're actually, just, if you just want to think of it that way, we're
kind
just
of hard
number
to
one.
Be humble, right?
Yeah, it's a little hard.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, my name is Peter Kanegi. I am a Benton County farmer. I've also been involved since the inception with the Benton County CWMA. And, you know, this, you guys recognize the issues that we have with invasive weeds. And, you know, it's penny-wise and pound-foolish to cut ourselves short now. You know, we have been, ODA has been short on funds to do this. The counties are short on funds. There are no weed control districts in Western Oregon, or no functioning. Maybe Marion County has one, but I'm not sure how well it functions. But, you know, if we don't keep funding these things, we're going to pay for it later. We're going to pay for it later. You know, I personally, on my 450 acres, probably spend anywhere between $35,000 and $50,000 a year on weed control, both for agronomic weeds, keeping my crops clean because I'm raising seed crops, and trying to control the invasives that come down along the river, you know, the ivy, the Ludwigia, the false brome. There's a bunch of stuff. And, you know, we're... You know, I'm to the point of giving up on some of these things. You know, I've been involved with the Benton SWCD. We created a project called the Main Stem Cooperative to look at weeds along the Willamette. And we started to tackle some of them, and one of the first things we went for was Ludwigia. And we've gotten a couple years in, but we don't have funding to adequately do the job. And I think at this point, you know, if we don't have some commitment for funding from the state, you know, we're wasting our money to keep doing it because we can't keep ahead of it. And I, you know, my admonition to you guys is that let's increase this. Let's get more money into that. It's money that we need to spend. There's other places where you can cut money out of the budget that won't affect us 20 years down the road. Cutting money out of the budget for this, we'll pay for it, and our kids will pay for it.
Thank you, Representative Clem, and the entire committee for your time and for listening to us speak on the significance of House Bill 2043. My name is Michelle Delapine, and I'm the Invasive Species Program Coordinator at West Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District. I also serve on the steering committee of the Ford County Cooperative Weed Management Area, and today I represent the interests of all the other soil and water conservation districts who couldn't be here today from across Oregon that together comprise the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts. We are very much the boots on the ground, if not the hands and knees at times, and the state noxious weed control program are the brains and the arms and the legs that tie it all together and that provide strategic guidance and make sure that all of our efforts are well coordinated. Invasive species know no boundaries, and so it's really important that we have a state program in place that makes sure that all the efforts across the state are working together efficiently and effectively. The Noxious Weed Control Program, in addition to maintaining a statewide mapping database, also provides actual assistance with control on the ground, expertise. They participate in our CWMAs. They, of course, maintain the state weed ranking system to help us prioritize what species we most need to control. So in Multnomah County, one of these weeds is Phragmites, and if you've ever been to New York or any of the states surrounding New York, you've seen this invasive grass. It's very aggressive. It grows very tall, 10 to 15 feet or more. It literally swallows up entire patches of land, particularly those with water flowing through them. So irrigation canals, shorelines, wetlands, marshes, like really sensitive habitats. And it's ubiquitous across their landscape, and it's really sad. Here in Oregon, we're really lucky because we only have a few infestations along the Columbia River. And we've been getting on top of them thanks to the Noxious Weed Control Program. We're also really lucky because not only do we have a small amount, but we have field coordinators from ODA that provide the expertise and guidance. Glenn Miller with the Noxious Weed Control Program has come up for the past several years, about 5 years now, with his boat and control equipment to provide actual control and also provides the ability to survey areas outside our jurisdiction to make sure that we're surveying the whole area that's affected. And it's been really important because this is a weed that really has devastating impacts to water quality, to our wildlife, our waterfowl, our fish, and impacts recreation very greatly, boating, fishing, swimming. You can't even walk through this grass. It's completely devastating. So as everyone so far has mentioned, I mean, our Noxious Weed Control Program does a phenomenal job. They only have 5 coordinators across the state, yet they are so effective and efficient at what they do, and it's just incredible because they're tasked with this monumental job of protecting Oregon from invasive species, and they're doing it very well, even though they really don't have much funding for it. And, you know, they need this little bit of funding in order to maintain their services, because if we lose even just a year, we're going to be starting all over again. Like, this isn't something that you can just put on hold. Like, you really need that continuation to keep it going.
Great. Any questions for this group? Vice Chair McClain.
Representative Barreto and I were over here as you were speaking so eloquently, all of you. And one of the comments that we're making to each other is that we really support this program as well. And it's real important for you guys to come up with things that the state does that maybe is outdated or the program's not as important. But where do we cut some things, you know, to be able to get enough funds to really continue a program that is so important and really the backbone of the spine of keeping industry and the farmers and the crops and the environment and the water quality as pristine as we want it to be. So if there are programs that you think aren't working as well, getting that, you know, sharpened up before you get to the next committee is going to be really, really important.
Are you asking us to say it right now? Where,
if you want to, if you
no, no, we don't have time to get into a budget exercise. But I think her advice is good. Given the chairman sitting next to me, also thinking the same question. If you have suggestions for ways to achieve budget parity once we send this bill down there, I think that'd probably be wise.
And we agree on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Mm-hmm. And let me get Katie and Jenny Dressler up here. While that's happening, maybe someone on the committee would like to think about telling us the story of how her, well, I won't give a clue. Is anybody in the committee have any information about Band in Oregon and how a noxious weed once got brought there?
Chair Clem.
Representative McEwen.
Chair Clem, you've called me out, I hear.
I didn't know. I just thought someone might know something about gorse.
This is a story that I told my first, I think it was in my first ag hearing, my freshman year in 2013, which is just in the spirit of full disclosure. My husband's great-grandfather is a gentleman named George Bennett who immigrated from Ireland, banned in Ireland, in the 1880s. 70s, way back, landed on the coast of Oregon and founded Bandon, Oregon. He was a sheep rancher and an attorney, and he brought with him a plant called gorse, which they use in Ireland for hedgerows to pen in sheep. Well, Ireland's about the size of Coos and Curry County. It's really small, so they can control every square inch of land that they own. Bandon's a little different. So when he landed on the shores of Bandon and started his sheep ranch, he planted gorse.
And that How's is that how, going?
It's not going well, and I take it very personally.
And I think Representative Brocksmith,
my family
that's your
is actually responsible for gorse, and I'm very, very sorry and apologize on behalf of my husband's family.
It's a good thing.
He's never going to forgive me.
Sorry for bringing it up,
Mr. Chair. Yeah, well, no, it's a good thing your district's north, because I don't know how the campaign would be.
Gorse ends at Florence, and we're trying to hold the line there. And my most humble apologies to everyone in Coos and Curry County.
Okay, now that we got that out of the way, anybody else have any ancestors that destroyed part of Oregon? It wants to burn down the whole town, too, FYI. Okay, welcome.
Well, good morning. For the record, Katie Fass with Oregonians for Food and Shelter. I'm here today to testify in regards to Representative McEwen's ancestors and the economic impact we're having. But seriously, in 2001, Department of Agriculture did a strategic plan around weeds and the impact that weeds are having in Oregon. And out of the 99 noxious weeds that were on the list at that time, 21 of those had an $83 million annual impact on the state. And that's not also including the habitat and the ecological impact that they're having, especially at a time when we're doing so much work in watershed restoration and on sage grouse habitat as well. The importance of 2043 is twofold. One, it is to maintain that strategic baseline at the Department of Ag for rapid response and detection, for the biological control program where they lead, and educational and technical support. The second piece is to provide funding through a grant program that was established in 2013 under ORS 569-520, but has been left unfunded. And the purpose of that grant program is to get some money to counties so that they aren't just relying on grants through the federal government and doing federal work and road work, but they're actually doing some of this rapid response on the ground as well. Currently, 23 counties have county weed programs. If we had some additional funding for some grant programs, I think we could bring on more counties into the programs. So that's really the basis. That need for the county program is $1.8 million. So this legislation doesn't really get us there, but at least it's starting to move forward. I do have one suggestion for the committee as a potential amendment. The governor's budget eliminates the biological control program, which is a program that, you know, when it's established and you're putting in those biological agents, they have a lifelong that continues on, so it's not just an annual seasonal control work, but you know they're continuing and having an impact of control. So one thing the committee might want to consider is calling out that position and highlighting the importance of that position in the bill. And this is really about moving the legislation to Ways and Means so those discussions can happen then. And I would encourage all of you, you've been great advocates this morning, but continue that advocacy with the Ways and Means Committee, not just the two you have sitting on the sub, but the entire committee.
Three.
And, you know, there was some discussion about, you know, things that could be cut. I would also say this legislature should also probably look at not adding new programs in the natural resource agencies until base programs are funded. And we're being able to hold the line on some of these things before we start adding in. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Chair Clem, members of the committee, my name is Jenny Dressler, and I represent the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. You heard from wonderful folks on the ground who work in this arena on a daily basis, and I don't necessarily need to repeat the great facts and figures that they shared and the important impact of this program for their operations. You actually heard from one of my board members, Peter Kanegi, about the direct impacts and about the direct cost when these weeds are not controlled, and about how we can actually leverage these dollars going forward if we make real investments in this program. So the request today is we need a Department of Ag program that is whole. We need to assist the counties in funding this noxious weed and funding their noxious weed investments and making sure that we're supporting our producers on the ground, our ranchers, our conservation districts. So our request from Farm Bureau is that we move this bill forward into the Ways and Means Committee to continue to have that discussion about biological control, about noxious weed control in general. So I'm available for any questions. Thank you.
Any questions? Power.
Do you know offhand, I was trying to find it in the ODA budget currently, how much is being spent on weed control programs, and I couldn't find it. Do you know?
I would just say, Chair Clem, Representative Power, Tim Butler with the department's here. He might be able to answer those questions. The biological control position, I think, is about $280,000 a year. Okay. Additionally, there are grant dollars right now through OWEB. Mm-hmm. as well, and then some base program at Department of Ag that's maybe around $500,000, but Tim would have the exact numbers.
Okay, thanks.
Further questions? Representative Witt?
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. Katie, to have an entire hillside in front of my farm covered with a scotch broom and to try and fend off my property from that is just... An overwhelming task, and to see the effectiveness of some biological controls and how quickly that actually occurred. I have to also be an advocate for biological controls being restored to the budget. So thank you for bringing that up.
Representative Escobar.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. We're seeing that down in
Southern Oregon Scots broom, but I was just wondering if Representative McEwen, if that had anything to do with your family or your husband's family.
Representative Esquivel, I take no credit for Scotch broom.
Gorse is enough.
Gorse is enough, yes. The burden is heavy enough with gorse.
Okay, any further questions? Great, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2043, open a public hearing on... I might open all of the public hearings for ODA here, so I don't have to do each one. House Bill, open public hearing, House Bill 2254, 2255, and 2256. And ask Lisa and Catherine to join us. And I just realized we actually have a quorum of the Ways and Means Subcommittee present on this committee. So now I'm asking, do we have to actually stay away from certain detailed topics about money here, because I've never experienced this before.
Yeah, I never thought about that.
Yeah, neither. It's possible someone else hadn't either. Now one of you may have to leave the room every time we start to talk about money. So I'm going to check in.
We're talking about money, are we?
Yeah.
With our three bills? Ours are housekeeping.
Yeah. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair Clem, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lisa Hansen. I'm the Deputy Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Your hearing this morning has touched on all areas of the ODA mission. And for those of you who are new to the committee, ODA is unique in state government in that we have a mission that not only regulates agriculture, but it also promotes for the economic development and sustainability of agriculture in Oregon. And so that is unique in the world of state agencies. In addition, we have a threefold mission that protects natural resources, protects food safety and consumer protection programs, as well as having a market access and development program. And so we're very broad in terms of the scope of what we do at ODA. You have three bills before you this morning from our agency, and generally I would consider them for the most part housekeeping bills. And so I'll start off with House Bill 2254 and just give you a little bit of background. Sometime during the interim, we had members from the produce industry come to us and say, you know, we need to change the way we're shipping our fresh produce into our export markets. Oregon law requires those products to be labeled when they leave here with labels that meet Oregon standards, but our markets, our export markets, then have to relabel them when they arrive. Is there a way that we can work around this? And we looked at the law and we talked with our legal counsel, and the way the law is currently written, there wasn't a way for us to do that. And so what you have before you in House Bill 2254 is a small exemption that really looks at allowing our exporters of fresh produce to put their clamshells or smaller cartons into a master container and having one master label, and then allowing them to be labeled upon arrival in the export market. Also within the bill, if those export shipments are canceled, it has a process for them to be relabeled to come back in to meet the Oregon requirements for U.S. labeling. And that simply is what it is. It really is a response to meeting the ever-changing needs of our produce shippers and helping them meet their market demands. So I'll stop there. I can walk you through the different sections if you want me to, or okay, that's what I thought. I like the head nod. Answer any questions.
Okay, questions about this one? It's pretty straightforward. Okay, let's move on to the next one.
So House Bill 2255 is another, what I would again consider a housekeeping bill. It's about bringing Oregon's milk laws into conformance with their federal partner. Currently, for Oregon shippers to be able to ship interstate, we have to meet the requirements of what is known as the pasteurized milk ordinance. And that's important because milk moves everywhere. Oregon law does not currently mirror those federal regulations. And what this bill does is simply bring it into conformance with that and updates it for today. Specifically, it provides ODA specific authority to adopt the federal pasteurized milk ordinance, and it also provides specific authority for ODA to suspend a shipper's license
upon a first violation of that order. And Oregon law does not allow that today. And those are basically the simple elements of this bill. It's a conformance type bill that helps us do our job.
Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair McLean.
On that one, can I just ask, if we're not in federal compliance, why haven't we dealt with this, or didn't they say something? Why are we just finding that?
Representative McLean, this discrepancy was discovered by our attorney during a review as we were going forward with routine rulemaking. We have notified the Federal Food and Drug Administration, who's an important partner for us on implementing our milk laws, and they have noted it as a concern that we need to fix in our law.
I might have to have you identify yourself for the record, though.
Excuse me, Chair Clem. Stephanie Page for the record with Oregon Department of Agriculture.
Good. We'll hear from him.
Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This only applies to people that dairies that ship across state lines. And if you do not ship across state lines, would it apply? The reason I ask that is because I just lost a dairy, a big dairy down there. And the reason they gave was too much regulation. Hmm. They couldn't comply with it.
Chair Clem, Representative Escobel, you're asking if the pasteurized milk ordinance would only apply to dairies that ship interstate.
That's the reason.
This ordinance applies to all dairies, in part because their processors may ship interstate, even if the dairies do not ship out of state to reach a processor.
Okay, let's move on to the next one.
House Bill 2256 basically helps us in the Oregon Department of Agriculture treat dietary supplements as food. Currently, we license and inspect dietary supplement manufacturers in Oregon for sanitation. That said, our law does not specifically give us authority to do that. Again, in a review working through issues with our legal counsel, it was identified that if we were in a situation where we took an action because of a sanitation issue or something else with a dietary supplement manufacturer, we aren't in a place for strong standing with those enforcement actions. Our current inspections are very limited to the sanitation piece. And again, this is one of the places where we don't conform with what FDA is doing around dietary supplements. So I'll pause there. We can go into this in more detail. This one's a little more challenging. We do know that we would ask the committee for permission to work with staff for an amendment. In the last several weeks, there are some issues in terms of some specific language from one of the associations that has come up that they would like us to work through that needs to be addressed in an amendment if possible.
That's fine. So we'll be seeing this one again, talking more about that at that time. Okay.
Yes, sir.
More questions about this one for the moment? Okay. Oh, and nobody signed up to contradict you or show you any love either for that matter. So we're just going to
It's housekeeping.
Yeah, we have to carry it on your good word. Okay. So I'm going to close the public hearings on House Bill 2254, 2255, and 2256.
Thank you.
And we've got, we had listed possible introduction of committee bills. I've got a few more, but instead of making you go through this as we get them, I'm just going to wait and do it all in once because there's a few more coming. So we're just going to hold off on doing anything. If you want heads up, Misty's got the LCs that we're sitting on waiting as possible committee bills. But otherwise, you can just wait till we get them all on, and then we'll do them all at one time. And let you out of here way early today. And
thank you, Chair.
The House Clint. Committee on House Agriculture and Natural Resources.
Take it.
Thank you.
Take it. You going to instruct us what to do, Mr. Chair, with all this time?
I know. Go to the lounge.
Instruct us what to do, Mr. Chair, with all this time?
I know. Go to the lounge.